Many students experience some type of sexual harassment while at college, often during their first year. Recently, the Department of Education released a list of 55 colleges and universities currently under investigation for possibly mishandling complaints. These schools receive federal funds and so are required to play a role in preventing sexual assault and harassment from happening, and promptly and thoroughly investigating claims when allegations are made. One in five women experience attempted or completed sexual assault while at college or university. And that is why we decided to focus attention on this pressing issue on this edition of Inside Out. Do join us. The statistics on sexual harassment in colleges and universities are shocking. 62% of female college students and 61% of male college students have reported having been sexually harassed at their university. 39% of students who experience sexual harassment say the incident or incidents occurred in the dorm. 35% or more of college students who experience sexual harassment do not tell anyone about their experiences. There is a big gap between what students experience and what they report. One in five women are sexually assaulted during their college years, but only a fraction of that number reports it. Charlotte is a visiting student from France who attends an Ivy League school in New York. While she did agree to talk to us generally about her experience, she didn't want to go into specifics and reveal her school or her last name.
For me, I experienced retaliation when I reported harassment. I was told by an admin that their hands are tied by policy and that I should be thankful nothing really bad happened.
Often ashamed, many stay quiet.
When a woman is assaulted on a college campus, usually her most common reaction is to keep quiet. And that is why many students stay silent. You know, we are always led to believe that rape is when someone got attacked by a stranger and you have to fight back. But that is not the case. If you are uncomfortable with that happening, then it's harassment, plain and simple.
Title IX came about in 1972 as a groundbreaking law intended to end sexual discrimination in education. The law applies to all educational programs that receive federal funding and to all aspects of schools' educational system. It benefits both boys and girls, but when abused, the students suffer.
The intent of the law is as important as all of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. All of the civil rights laws that benefit one of the protected classes, so-called, whether it's race, color, sex, etc. Title IX, specifically talking about gender in education. And the evidence over the last 42 years of its benefit is measurable and outstanding. Significant, I don't remember the exact numbers, but if there were just tens of thousands of women participating in collegiate sports, and now hundreds of thousands of women, or millions, I don't know the exact number at this moment, but it went up, I believe, sixfold. And of course, it also protects women in undergraduate or graduate institutions, or in all schools, from sexism. Sexism, sexual violence, and sexual harassment. So any type of discriminatory behavior that interferes with either the educational process itself, having a safe environment conducive to learning and the full college experience, or extracurricular activities such as sports or clubs, can't be infringed because of that person's gender. And again, it's almost exclusively directed toward and benefits women.
Jack Tuckner is a women's right in the workplace attorney and a founding partner of Tuckner Sipser. His New York City law firm, a plaintiff's employment law practice, may be the only law firm in the nation concentrating its practice on workplace gender rights. And Jack has established a reputation for feminist activism and the pursuit of gender justice in pay and other benefits of employment for all women. I bring up the recent list released by the Department of Education that 55 colleges are in violation of Title IX.
I saw the figure. I think what it shows is, because you had certainly eminent institutions that didn't exclude any, including Ivy League schools, like I believe Harvard and Princeton were on the list, it doesn't say what the alleged violation is. It could be relatively minor. It could be that they simply, you know, I don't know what it can be, but no one is saying it's that it means that sexual abuse is rampant on those campuses. I mean, I can't say because no, they haven't published the particulars, but it does show if 55 schools are right now, including the finest of the fine, are out of compliance with Title IX, what's wrong with this picture? There isn't enough. Maybe we need more than one Title IX compliance officer. Maybe we need to look at the fact that there is a look the other way attitude, there really is, because otherwise I think every freshman class would come in addition to orientation for where you register and where the cafeteria is and the student union, they would hear at some length about what is or isn't appropriate. And to sort of, so that they can empower men too to understand, because we do have, to use, you know, President Obama's always talking about the mad men culture. Okay, well, we have a bit of, we are that culture in many ways still. I don't feel at all comfortable, for instance, that my two young daughters that are in school or work in restaurants, part-time jobs, I'm always worried about, are they being subjected to something that you don't worry about when you have a son?
The Department of Education said the list was released in the hopes of bringing greater transparency to the issue in order to encourage meaningful dialogue on how to address this growing problem.
The point of all this is not so much that we want to, you know, police undergraduates and throw out, you know, frat boys who may have too many beers one night and come on to a woman. The point is to raise awareness so that we don't have this situation, that we're not having one in four women still subjected to sexual assaults on campuses.
One major issue with reporting sexual harassment is that universities tend to have fragmented reporting channels rather than a centralized system where a student knows to come to. This confusion lessens the odds that students will seek help. Local prosecutors are also reluctant to take these cases, so they often send the case back to campus judicial systems.
You know, there's the expression, do you really want to make a federal case out of this? An undergraduate doesn't want to have to be put through this Sisyphean task of actually having to go to federal court and sue their college for discrimination under Title IX. It's an enormous undertaking that is extremely enervating and challenging and difficult to do emotionally, financially, in every way.
So what happens to the school who are in violation? Well, if a college is found to be in violation of Title IX after a federal investigation, it often leads to some form of resolution with the education department, which can entail rewriting policies, requiring staffing changes, or other mandates. In some cases, the education department can refer the matter to another agency, such as the Department of Justice, or move to cut off a school from all federal funding. However, no higher education institution has ever lost federal funding due to Title IX violations.
Also, we know that in many colleges, faculty that spoke out about rape and harassment on the campus were silenced and called troublemakers. This is because colleges see rape crisis as a stain on their image. But we already know that one out of five women will be raped in college. So this doesn't make any sense. These accidents are happening and will happen. So how can you say your image is spotless?
Charlotte says when she sees administrators and teachers fail to take sexual harassment cases seriously, her and her peers feel that they are overreacting, or that their overall discomforts, fears, and anxieties are unfounded.
You know, the issue of a sexual harassment and assault is sometimes discussed in classrooms by some of our professors, and they encourage us to speak up. But, you know, for many girls, it's not easy to open a case, and we feel ashamed of what happened. Maybe because we are not sure of the laws in place or what the reaction will be. It's still a taboo in a lot of people's mind, and the school really makes you feel like you are bothering them. Like they say, well, what did she do to cause that?
If we care about you know, about the advancement of gender equality, because it's all sort of, I think, tied to perhaps even the survival of all of us in our civilization. If there was a little more feminism and a little more sanity and equality, whether from income equality to just gender equality. And I know that there are other countries one can say, well, would you rather live in that country than the United States? I'm not saying that.
My next guest argues that while sexual assault is a horrific crime and colleges and universities should take immediate steps to rid themselves of this scourge, being falsely accused of sexual assault is also a horrible, life-altering trauma. He writes in an article that, quote, a student found responsible for sexual assault is almost always expelled from school and barred from campus. His permanent record will often note that he was found culpable of sexual assault, thereby limiting his educational, employment, and housing opportunities.
There have been several cases that I wrote about in which students have been expelled from college and have been stigmatized as sexual assailants in the face of dramatic exculpatory evidence. Emails, text messages, the reports of friends of both students. So that's a concern that needs to be in the mix. I mean, I think that there's much that's admirable in this campaign to rid campuses of sexual assailants. But we cannot run roughshod over the rights of the accused.
He adds that until there are efficient laws in place, this trend will continue.
There are dangerous perpetrators on a lot of college campuses. These are people who prey on women, who are often drunk, and they need to be expelled, and they need to be imprisoned. And campuses, colleges need to work with law enforcement to make that happen. But in a lot of cases, in all of the cases that I've dealt with, you have two students who have a very complicated relationship, often an unhealthy relationship. They have very different perspectives of what happened in their relationship, and it's very difficult to adjudicate these cases. But there is enormous pressure just to find students guilty and expel them. And the new directives coming out of Washington don't respect the rights of the accused to due process. Very basic things like presumption of innocence, freedom from double jeopardy, having the same accusation keep following him, right to counsel. I mean, if a person's going to be expelled from college and stigmatized, that person should have the right to have a lawyer present in these campus tribunals.
According to Carl, the reports coming out of the Obama administration call for increased training for victims' advocates, more partnerships with rape crisis centers and police departments, and bystander training to teach men to intervene if they see a woman who is about to be victimized. But they barely mention alcohol and make no mention at all of how dormitory living arrangements might contribute to the problem.
Multiple bullet shots and bullet holes in windows at the Ivy Deli, which is on Pardal. We'll update this information as soon as it is available. But right now, law enforcement is too busy at the scene to let us know what happened.
Friday, May 23rd, 2014. A night of horror in the small West Coast community of Isla Vista. Using a knife, machetes, and three semi-automatic handguns, Elliot Roger goes on a killing spree.
All of a sudden, we hear like five really loud gunshots.
What we do know is one fatality so far, and that is on Adele Playa Street. We're not sure if that person suffered from gunshot wounds or from something else.
He shot, and I just felt the wind like pass right by my face, and I was like, what the f***?
Because as soon as we got up there, we got into Silver Greens, and a cop came by and like got everyone inside the building saying there was a shooter.
So I turned around, and I started like walking really fast the other way, and I heard a gunshot, so I was like, I had no idea that it was a pistol at all.
Some non-essential calls directed to clear and standby to assist. Fifth, Central to all units. Officers require assistance.
The man identified as Elliot Rogers sought retribution against women whom he said sexually rejected him. He went on a killing spree in California, killing 6 people, sending 7 more to the hospital with serious gunshot injuries. 3 of the bodies were reportedly removed from Rogers' apartment. Before the mass murder, however, he had made several YouTube videos complaining that college is a place for fun and sex, and that women wouldn't pay attention to him.
College is the time when everyone experiences those things, such as sex and fun and pleasure. But in those years, I've had to rot in loneliness. It's not fair. You girls have never been attracted to me. I don't know why you girls aren't attracted to me, but I will punish you all for it. It's an injustice, a crime, because I don't know what you don't see in me. I'm the perfect guy. And yet you throw yourselves at all these obnoxious men instead of me, the supreme gentleman. I will punish all of you for it. On the day of retribution, I am going to enter the hottest sorority house of UCSB. And I will slaughter every single spoiled, stuck-up, blonde I see inside there. All those girls that I've desired so much, they would have all rejected me and looked down upon me as an inferior man if I ever made a sexual advance towards them.
According to his family, Rogers was seeking psychiatric treatment. But to many, dismissing the case as a lonely madman was a mistake and was glossing over the role misogyny and the gun culture plays in what they say is a sexist society.
Was discovered that he had been posting for months, if not years, on anti-women websites, all kinds of, with a lot of other men with similar, deeply hateful feelings towards women. It catalyzed this new meme, the whole hashtag Yes All Women that has gone viral. And the 2 or 3 million tweets that have, and the rest of it that's sort of all over the internet, where everyone is talking about the everyday sexism, talking about street harassment, talking about the fact that we're the only country of the OECD industrialized nations that doesn't have guaranteed maternity leave, let alone paid maternity leave, the only one. We're the only nation of 3 in the world, and the other 2 being Swaziland and Papua New Guinea, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, that do not, again, require maternity leave. It's really fairly regressive. It's a sexist, you know, sort of girls gone wild culture.
Take a look at this recent discussion on MSNBC.
And the result is a deeply misogynistic online forum. And now, one of the posters of those sites is taking the hate even further, claiming, quote, 6 lives would have been saved if there were a societal mechanism for men to learn, quote, game and masculinity, and that more people will die unless you give men sexual options. Elizabeth Plank is the executive social editor of Policy Mike, and Mark Potok is with the Southern Poverty Law Center. And Mark, I want to start with you because you guys posted a bunch of stuff at your site about these so-called men's rights groups. There are a variety of them. How big is this movement? How broad are they? And are violent posts frequently associated with them?
Well, there is a whole world known as the manosphere of these sites. There are scores and scores of the sites, if not hundreds of them. And the thing that is most prevalent, the thing that's most noticeable about them, is they're often really extreme misogyny. You know, let me say that there are certainly some legitimate complaints, men who have had very bad problems with custody battles, with family courts, and so on. But this is a world that, in fact, has produced a number of mass killers.
The issue has finally gained some attention among policymakers. Recently, sexual assault advocacy organization leaders, student victims, and campus safety officials spoke at a roundtable discussion on the effectiveness of the Clery Act. and the Campus Sexual Violence Elimination Act, two laws enacted, one in 1990, the other in 2012, to prevent sexual assault at colleges and universities. This was the second of several roundtable discussions organized by Senator Claire McCaskill aimed at combating rape and sexual assault on college campuses.
I'm holding these roundtables in order to bring together a diverse group of stakeholders to hear about what is working and what is not, what we can do to improve the response to sexual violence on college campuses, where we may need to legislate, and maybe where we may need to unlegislate.
Increasingly being invoked by college students following poor handling of their sexual assault cases, activists hope that greater enforcement of Title IX may force universities to better serve those reporting rape. However, with not enough information at hand, some female students are still unaware that they can use the provision to make a formal complaint. We leave you to decide. Is the issue of sexual harassment and assault on college campuses case-specific, or is it part of the overall culture of sexism?